This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We'll have a look this afternoon at an organization that's working to improve education standards in rural Africa. And later in the show, a look at what was once one of Ohio's most important waterways and efforts to preserve its history. But first, after being left off the tax levy that will fund improvements for Cincinnati's other iconic structure, Union Terminal, Music Hall got some good news today, and here to tell us about it, WVXU's Tana Weingartner. Tana, what's the word? What's the big announcement today?
Well, the big announcement today is that Music Hall is getting a $25 million investment from the state of Ohio in the form of historic tax credits. Now, they'd known that they'd been applying for these and wanting to get them, but the typical award is $5 million. However, every 2 years, the state can award one project $25 million that'll be paid out over 5 years if the project meets certain catalytic goals, as they might call them. And they decided that Music Hall does, in fact, meet those goals, and so they got the bigger tax credit from
the state. So this is a catalytic tax credit.
That's right. And it basically means that the project has to affect the surrounding community, like within a certain radius, 2,500 feet. They have to be fostering economic development, that kind of thing.
Well, how much is still needed for renovating Music Hall?
So numbers are a little weird when you start doing this. And for an English major, they're a little harder. We talk about bonds and financing. But the short story is about 20 to 25 million. The five they think they already have, that's kind of coming. So 20 million is the number we're looking at right now, about $20 million to get the project to where it'll be shovel ready.
So this put them a lot closer today then.
A lot closer, exactly. So I asked Otto Buttig, he's the president of the Music Hall Revitalization Company. I should also mention he sits on our board. What's our timeline then? So if everything were to go just how they want it, now that they've got this $25 million, if they can raise that, he thinks they can raise the $20 million in 6 months. That means they could be ready for, you know, shovel ready fall 2015. That means the groups could be back in Music Hall, all done for the 2017-2018 season. Now, of course, that's if everything goes as they want.
That remains to be seen. Well, what kind of work will this go toward, Tana?
There's a lot of issues around accessibility. Music Hall is just not very accessible to folks with challenges like wheelchairs or other things like that. So accessibility has long been an issue at Music Hall. They've got failing mechanical systems, if some structural issues as well. If you walk around, if you take the behind the scenes tour, you'll see buckets catching water that's dripping from the mechanical systems or from the ventilation systems. You see that everywhere throughout the backstages. There's some structural issues. Like I said, there's poles in the middle of things where they need to be able to move big sets in and out. Or if they build something in the workshop, they have to then take it apart, move it onto the stage, and put it all back together. So those are some of the big ones. Another thing, the music library is horribly overcrowded, they say. If you look in it, there's just stacks of paper everywhere. And the fire suppression system is a fire extinguisher. So they need to bring some of the code things up to date as well.
Now, Music Hall wasn't the only tax credit recipient in Southwest Ohio. Who were some of the others?
That's right. There is a building in Middletown, and of course I walked in here without that information exactly which one it is. They're getting some money. A school in the West End on Freeman Avenue is getting some money as well. And in Dayton, there's a building in Dayton. I've just forgotten the name of it. Weesty, maybe. Something like that. Dayton's getting some money, too. So that announcement is coming up in about 25 minutes.
Those were all the smaller tax credits. So
Correct. This was
the biggie today.
This is the big one. Music Hall in Cincinnati, the big winner today.
Thanks, Tana.
Thank you.
WVXU's Tana Weingartner. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. For many in rural Africa, education provides the only real escape from crippling poverty and the endless dependency on foreign aid. For the last 2 years, the African International Foundation for Educational Excellence has been working to improve educational standards in rural villages in Kenya. And here to discuss training teachers and improving education in rural parts of Kenya is Dr. Peter Gitau, president of the African International Foundation for Educational Excellence. Dr. Gitau is also vice president for student affairs at Northern Kentucky University. And Peter, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org with your questions and comments, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And tell me how you started the foundation.
Well, let me give you a little bit of background about myself. So I grew up in rural Africa. I went to a small school in a village in Kenya, you know, walked about 5 miles to school back and forth, and basically had a very difficult experience, but managed to survive through it all and get a terminal degree. So when I came over, I would once in a while go back to Kenya and visit and meet kids that I knew belonged to some of my old peers, my old colleagues. And occasionally I would pass by the school that I attended as a little kid, and I saw needs that I knew were very, very glaring and needed to be addressed. So for quite some time, I would organize groups of students and other community people. We'd go and do projects. We'd go fix up a classroom or provide some books. And then I felt that we needed to do this in a more sustainable way, in a way that was more formalized, where we can get even more legitimacy and credibility with different groups. And so that's when I decided to put all of these efforts in and forward them into the African International Foundation.
So you have had, as you say, firsthand experience seeing what the school system is like in Kenya.
Yes, I have. My school was and still is one of the poorest, in one of the poorest regions in rural Africa, very close to the foot of Mount Kenya. And when I went to school, we did not have floors. We didn't have walls. You know, classes had no windows, and you know, we were lucky we had books, and many times we did not have teachers. And at the same time, we needed to compete with every other kid in the nation during the national exams, where every kid at the end of seventh grade was doing the same exam. And that exam would determine what secondary school you go to, and then whether you get invited to a national university or not. So I went through that system.
The national exams are pretty tough because it's a one-shot deal, isn't it, as you were saying earlier?
It is a one-shot deal. So, you know, the system I went through, we had 7 years of primary. And so at the end of those 7 years, you're tested on everything you've learned for those 7 years. And the exam would last 3 days at the time. Then you go on. And if you're invited to a good secondary school, it's 4 years. And at the end of those 4 years, you get a test that tests you on everything you've learned for 4 years. And the test is 1 month long. And that determines whether you qualify to be admitted to the national universities. So needless to say, less than 1% of those who started at the primary level would find their way to the national university.
Is this a system where a lot of parents are forced to seek outside tutoring for their kids because they're just not getting a quality education?
Well, that, but also knowing that you've got so many spaces at the national universities, and education is seen as the one and best way out of poverty. And so you want to place your kid in the best schools. And if you can't, you want to make sure they are surrounded with all the kind of support they can get. So you invest. My father personally told us that he did not have land, which is the other biggest asset in Africa. If you have land, you're wealthy. But he said, I don't have land. The next best thing I can do for you is invest in your education, because I know this will get you out of this crippling poverty. And that's what he did. So 7 of us all went to school through secondary school, and all of us have something that we do after we have finished our school. And I'm so grateful that we were able to do that, because that has really helped us out of that cycle.
So what's it like being a kid in a rural school in Kenya? I mean, how tough is it to get a good education?
Well, you wake up at about 5 or 5:30 in the morning. And my first pair of shoes was when I was 13. So you do about a 5 mile hike to school. And by the time you get to school, it's probably about 7:30. And from then on, it is a very hectic schedule. From lesson to lesson, there is a lot of cramming. There is a lot of rote. It's heavy exam based. And you're there probably until well past 5, and then you walk back to school. You walk back home after a very tiring day, and you might be lucky that you had lunch. You probably didn't have lunch. And if you have homework, remember your home probably doesn't have electricity or running water. So you have to figure out how you're going to do that homework, before the following day.
Now, when did Kenya start its public education system? It was the early 1960s, wasn't it?
Yes, it was early 1960s. Kenya got its independence from the British in 1963, and so by that time, formal education had been established. But then after that, the national government picked up the education system. It's been an evolving process. The system has changed a little bit from the previous 7 years, 4 years, 2 years, and 3 years in college to where now it's 8 years in elementary and 4 years in secondary school and 4 years in college.
What's it like for the teachers in the rural schools? Do they face a lot of shortages of books, shortages of materials, just bad school buildings, that kind of thing?
Well, I really laud the teachers over there. I really laud their efforts because they do a lot without much. You've got one teacher with about 50 or 60 kids, and they don't have much help. They don't have aides in the class. They may or may not have books. But particularly if you're in the rural areas, chances are there might be one book in the classroom, and that might be the book that the teacher has. So what the teacher spends their time doing, even in my own case, is many times they are reading that book out to you and you're copying that book so that then you have time, you have something to read from. If you come from one of the more fortunate families, they might afford to buy you some books, because what the government would do is just hire the teachers and give you some very basic infrastructure. The rest of it is really up to the parents and the community to provide. If it's a community that's living on less than $10, a month, then they're not going to do that. So it's very, very tough.
And based on what you're telling me, I guess in this country, we really take our education system for granted.
Oh, yes, we do. One of the things I love doing is when I recruit students, college students and community people to go with me, we go over there and we spend quality time at the school system, with the school, with the kids and the teachers. And the kids come back just changed when they see what they have versus what the kids over there have. And yet they see this excitement and passion for learning that the Kenyan kids have, because they want to read a book whenever they can. It's just that they don't have enough books to read.
Well, we will continue our conversation about the African International Foundation for Educational Excellence after the break. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon is Dr. Peter Gatow, president of the African International Foundation for Educational Excellence. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And how many schools does the Kenyan system have, and how many children are they serving? Do you have any idea on that?
Well, let me say this. There are many, many, many schools in every community. The average primary school has about, I want to say about 300 to 400 kids running from preschool up to eighth grade. There are many schools. Let me just say that.
Is there a gap between Kenya's urban schools and the rural schools in terms of funding and performance?
Well, the biggest gap that there is because the government will only provide one teacher per grade. And so if the community where the school is based does not have the resources to hire supplemental teachers, then that school is going to be barely staffed. And so what you find in the rural schools will have very, very few teachers, and some of these teachers probably don't have much training. Maybe the most they have is a 2-year program. But the urban schools, because of the community resources that they have, can afford to hire teachers with university degrees, master's degrees, and some even PhDs. Now, I want you to look at this system and say, if you have kids in the rural schools that are going through the same curriculum as their peers in the urban schools, but the kids in the urban schools have better teachers, they have better supplies, they have better facilities, but at the end of 8 years of primary education, they are going to sit through the same national exam, which will determine where they get placed at in secondary school. What chances do the kids in the rural schools have of making it when they are competing with their peers in the urban schools? That's part of the reason why I started this foundation, because I'm a product of that rural school system that somehow managed to make it.
And knowing there's a problem with the rural schools, is the Kenyan government reluctant to provide more funding for those schools? And if so, why are they reluctant?
The Kenya government is not reluctant to do that. In fact, one of the things that the government has done in the last 5 years is to open up primary education and call it free primary education. Now, what they mean by saying that is that kids don't have to pay fees to go to primary school. Important distinction, because after primary school, if you do well and you get invited to a secondary school, you have to pay. So it's a question of what kinds of resources are available to be distributed among all the many, many kids in the primary schools. And so what you find is the schools in the urban communities are getting more funding, not from the government, but from the community in which they are, because the community in which they are is more resourceful.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's talk with Andrew in Dayton. Good afternoon, Andrew. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was curious, actually, if the government over there is planning on reforming the education system in terms of college. It sounds to me like the test you were talking about, the one-and-done deal, is really stressful for a lot of people, number one. And number two, it seems like if you bomb that test, and maybe this is just, you know, my ignorance of the system, but it seems like if you bomb the test, your chances of having a future are severely impaired. So I was wondering if the government was planning on reforming that to give kids maybe who didn't do a good job on the test a second or third shot to get their life, you know, in order.
That's true, and that's a great question. When I went to school, which was back in the 70s and the 80s, if you bombed that test, you basically were done because there were not many opportunities to even repeat or redo the test. Several reforms have been done to where now there is more integration of some technical subjects, where the load has been reduced a little bit, because at the time there were so many subjects you had to cram in such a short time. And so kids were getting so stressed. It still is a very stressful system, because it relies a lot on mastering content, and most of it is memorizing content. But I want to say that I have seen steps being made in the right direction. But until the whole reform process is done, we have kids in the pipeline whose future is going to be determined by how they do in the current system. So that's why, as much as we are advocating for reform change, we have to continue working with those kids in the present structure to make sure that they have a future and that, you know, they are not passed by.
Andrew, thank you very much for the call. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Peter, tell me about some of the things that your foundation is doing to address the educational problems in Kenya.
Well, one of the things that we have done, these are very basic things, is understanding that kids will learn better in a better learning environment. So my foundation has undertaken to fix classrooms, ensuring that the kids in the classrooms, in the schools where we are sponsoring projects, have a classroom that has a floor, that has walls, that have windows, and where there is opportunity for natural lighting. We've also been good at providing textbooks and other resource materials, because we want to create a culture of reading. That's very, very important. In the six schools where we have projects, we have built a library, a school community library for each school, because, again, we want to make sure that that culture of reading extends to the community. More than that, every year we are conducting teacher training and development workshops that ensure that we are empowering the teachers who are over there to be the best that they can be. Most important is when we do all these things, the kids get motivated and they do well. But since they have to pay to go on to secondary school, and most of them cannot afford to go on to secondary school, because first of all, they're thinking about food that they have to eat, my foundation has come in and we have a program where we sponsor every kid that does well at these national exams and gets invited to a good secondary school. And so we provide partial scholarships to help them move forward. For a kid to go on to secondary school, it costs about $500 a year, which is broken into three semesters. And so I look for friends and colleagues who can help me sponsor at least one kid through secondary school. That breaks the cycle of poverty.
And what you're talking about is the scholars program, correct?
It's a scholars program, yes.
Okay, very good. What are some of the success stories, the accomplishments that make you feel really good about what you're doing?
There's one that I want to share. So in 2002, when I did my first trip to Kenya, I went to this school which I attended as a kid. And as I was talking with the teachers, they said, there's one kid you really have to meet and you really have to support. His name was Francis. I asked what's the deal with him. He did so well at the end of eighth grade. He was invited to a great secondary school. His parents could not help him move forward because they did not have money. So he went to a local secondary school. He was going to fail. So I stepped in with some friends, and we went and provided support to this young man. And I'm happy to say tomorrow, not today, but tomorrow, Francis is graduating with a degree in pharmacy.
Wow.
A degree in pharmacy. His sister, who is 2 years younger, and I'm talking about a family that was so, so poor where food was a problem, just graduated last month with a degree in social work. You talk about success and change.
That's to make you feel great.
Yes.
Let's talk with Daniel from Indianapolis, and Daniel happens to be driving through town this afternoon. Daniel, you're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. So earlier in the program, we heard about United States college students going over to experience extreme poverty in Kenya. And that sounds like a really great experience for them. But I'm just curious how you go about that so that it's not just poverty tourism, so that it's really beneficial to both parties.
Exactly. And one of the things I like to make clear is that when we talk about wealth and poverty, it's not just in terms of money. We want to make sure that our students who travel with us go to experience the cultural richness and to stretch themselves in terms of their ability to relate with groups that are different from themselves. So yes, we go and we help the communities where we are visiting, and we have a good homestay program where the students are hosted by local families. But it's interesting to see at the end of the 1 week homestay program, our students have gained so much more, not by looking at poverty, but by learning about community and culture and how things are done, that it's a very mutually beneficial relationship.
Peter, what are some of the foundation's future projects?
One of the future projects we have is, of course, we want to extend beyond the six schools, because anytime I go, I have so many more parents saying, can you come and help us? Because we can't afford to take our kids on to secondary school. So I want to extend the scholars program. I believe that that's one of the most critical pieces of our program. The other thing is I want to spread beyond these six schools and fix up a few more classrooms. No kid should have to go through a full day sitting on a desk that's falling apart or just, you know, being beat by the weather. So we want to make sure we do that. We're in the process of completing a school community clinic. We've done that one halfway. We spent about $7,000 to do that. So we need a little bit more funding to do it, and we are going to do it because we believe that school-based health is also important.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Dr. Peter Gatal, president of the African International Foundation for Educational Excellence. Dr. Gatal is also vice president for student affairs at Northern Kentucky University.